This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
He's a former All-Pro tackle and Super Bowl champion.
The Chiefs' kingdom has firmly planted its flag on top of football's highest summit.
But now that he's retired, he's a man of leisure and still has yet to invite C-Dot and Rob over to his house.
A Sunday and a bunch of football on, a bunch of games going over there. Watch the games, kind of one larger hangout area.
It's 3 o'clock on Tuesday. Here's Mitchell Schwartz.
We're happy to be joined in studio right now by All-Pro right tackle Mitchell Schwartz. Mitch, I felt bad for you this week for this reason. When I'm seeing the Pro Bowl alternates get announced, and then I look at the quarterbacks for the AFC, and I'm seeing that all you had to do was basically play quarterback for a handful of games and throw 2 touchdowns, and you can get a Pro Bowl berth. And you play at an All-Pro level, help your team get to the Super Bowl, and you didn't get one of those phone calls. I felt bad for you, Mitch. Who can we talk to?
That's a great question. So, based on my understanding, the Pro Bowl is 1/3 fans, 1/3 coaches, and 1/3 players. So, theoretically, we can't even get on the fans for voting other people in. It seems like it's more the other players, I guess the guys I would be blocking, or the coaches. It just comes down to me playing right tackle. Like, it's kind of that simple. The 1 year Fish made it, and I was like the 4th alternate. And I mean, he was having a good year. I thought I was having a good year too. And it was just kind of funny how that ended up being. So the closest I've come is 4th alternate. Apparently, if you're a quarterback, you have a chance of actually getting to the Pro Bowl as a 4th alternate. But the fact it was like Huntley after playing 4 games makes no sense at all. And
he threw 2 touchdown passes.
The other thing is when you see stuff like that, it just reinforces how dumb it all is. And so it's hard to get too upset. I mean, I really wanted to go to the Pro Bowl. One, because it kind of like, as much as all pros are cool and everyone's like, oh, it's more prestigious. And it's like, yeah, but you don't get to like go hang out with a bunch of other good players for the week. You don't get to, you know, kind of boost your profile. You don't get any money for that. You don't get so many other kind of cool things that go along with the Pro Bowl that I would have loved. So, yeah, I mean, I was pretty bummed out the first couple times. There was like a 1 or 2 year window in that year in particular that I was, I think, the 4th alternate. There's a window between kind of the mainstays and the up and coming group. Like, it was Villanueva, it was Taylor Lewan. There were a couple other guys that were basically getting it every year. And I think that year, like, Lewan had gotten hurt, or maybe he got popped for whatever PEDs and he wasn't eligible. Like, Villanueva was either hurt, or it was some sort of thing where it was right in between, like, Ronnie Stanley, Laramie Tunzel, you know, the young guys kind of getting the nod, and the older guys who were falling off. And I was like, okay, this is the year for me to make the Pro Bowl. Like, if there's any year, it's going to be this one. And got 4th alternate.
So right now we're joined in studio by Mitchell Schwartz. I don't know if I've told you this story or not. I've told it on the air. The first time I met your parents, I asked your dad what it was like to see you go to the Super Bowl. And he told one of the greatest stories I had ever heard. Like, you could sense like the sense of emotion. You know, you grow up a football fan, and not just you get to go to the Super Bowl, but you get to see your son win the Super Bowl. And he told the story about being on the field and you hand the trophy. It was a really cool story. What was your Super Bowl experience like? You're one of the few people I know that actually got a chance to play in the biggest game. You didn't just play in it. You actually won the Super Bowl. Take us back through that week.
So the week was very cool. It wasn't as like crazy as I think maybe people expect it to be or people think it is. And it was also very stressful because we just kept watching the 49ers D-line over and over and over. And that was the year that they had the best defense and by far the best defensive line in the NFL. But this week is very different from like a traditional coach read bye week during the season where he would basically give you the whole week off and go do what you need to do, come back and don't be too out of shape and don't gain too much weight. This week is kind of the first week of install. So you almost treat it much like a normal week. And, you know, I know that they put out the injury stuff and they said they didn't practice today, but you're still, I'm guessing they had a walkthrough. You're kind of doing your normal Wednesday install. Tomorrow's normal Thursday. Friday's normal Friday. I don't fully remember what Saturday looks like. And then you travel on Sunday. The idea being you do get pulled in a few different directions while you're down there. He does want to give you enough time to see your family, see your friends. You do kind of want to minimize distractions as well. So instead of saving preparation for next week, it's a mad dash to like get all the logistics done this week, get your ticket requests in, get your hotel requests, figure out who's coming to the game, who's not, and get that out of the way. So by the end of today, I think you're expected to have that all taken care of. And, you know, ideally you don't have any alterations and just like, all right, I've got all that out of the way. All the logistics are done. They bring in a ton of resources to help you out. And then it's football from here on out. And so when you get there next week, you've already done a week of preparation. You've kind of done a full install. So you're just reinstalling. And they're, you know, they're coaches, so they like to tinker and they like to change things up a little bit. But it stays relatively similar to their initial game plan. And you do have a few more media obligations. The schedule is just a little bit different because obviously you're not at home. You got to bus different places and the timing of it is a bit off. And so you're not able to get like the quote unquote full work day that you normally would on a Wednesday, Thursday, but you've already made up for it with a full week of preparation this week. So it gets monotonous because again, you're just watching the same stuff over and over and over. And we had Wisniewski, who was playing left guard at the time. He had come from Philly, won the Super Bowl there. And that was his biggest piece of advice for all of us is basically don't get bored because you're going to get bored and try to take notes every day. Try to keep things fresh. Try not to, oh man, I've seen this play for the 17th time. I know it's going to happen, but just like try to look at it with fresh eyes. And so that's what we tried to do. But like I said, that week of the Super Bowl, I mean, you had media night on Monday night, which, you know, in a normal season, we're off Monday. So like that's an off day anyway. I think we had a little practice on Monday afternoon to kind of get the body back acclimated after the plane ride on Sunday. You know, Tuesday, you're probably having a walkthrough and they do a couple things to keep you busy. And then the rest of the week, again, it kind of morphs into a normal-ish football week. You just have a media obligation for like an hour in the hotel before your practice. And then you just have to deal with bus rides and logistics of traveling. And then, you know, you're free to do what you need to do once meetings are over. And there is curfew. So every night, you know, you can't go out till 2 or 3 a.m.
I was just going to ask, what's the balance of all of this? Because you don't seem like the guy that goes out, but you guys were in the Super Bowl in Miami. I don't think that everybody was just in the hotel nonstop for 24/7. So
nope.
You've got family, you know, people want to come in. People want to be part of the Super Bowl. You've got football. You've got to stay focused on this. But you also, like, you've worked your entire life to get to this moment. You want to enjoy some of what the Super Bowl has to offer. What was that balance like for you? Did you see how your teammates also handled balancing that as well?
Yeah, it's difficult, especially once the weekend comes because, you know, most people aren't going to get there on Tuesday or Wednesday. They're going to come in Saturday or they're going to come in Friday and they're going to spend the weekend and they're going to fly out Monday. And everyone's doing that. So you just have, I mean, I think your allotment is like 15 tickets that you're able to purchase. No, you don't get given any tickets. You get nothing for free. So you have the opportunity to purchase, you know, 15 tickets at face value if you have that many people coming. But again, most of those people are going to come on the weekend. And so there is that dance of, I've got all these people coming. Do I see my parents? Do I see my family? Do I see my friends? What ratio? Like, you know, we were in, I think it's Aventura, in Miami. We were right across from this major mall. So like, do I go to the mall and meet people? Do you like go to this place? Do you get them on property and just go to Starbucks and say hi for a little bit? So you are balancing all those things and it's a little bit difficult. And that's where, again, the preparation from coach from the 2 weeks, understanding that, like, you know, it's not feasible to assume everyone's going to sit locked in their room and they're not going to enjoy the city that they're in. They're not going to enjoy having the people that they care about in town. So you try to get as much of that out of the way as possible, and then you can be smart about who you see when you see them, and it kind of becomes a juggling act.
Coming up on the other side, I want to get your thoughts on the AFC Championship game. You were at the game. I want to get your thoughts on how Patrick played. I thought this was the best that we'd ever seen Patrick. I also thought it was the best that we'd ever seen Chris Jones. I want your take on that. And we'll keep getting some of your Super Bowl stories. Mitchell Schwartz joining us in studio here in the 3 o'clock hour. Keep it right here. It's The Drive on 610 Sports Radio.
You're listening to The Drive with Carrington Harrison, brought to you by the DePasquale Moore Law Firm. Remember, Mike's got this on 610 Sports Radio and the Odyssey app.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
All right, football fans, the NFL Draft is almost here, and the free Odyssey app brings you the latest coverage from the biggest sports radio stations across the country. Which players will help your team the most? Who will make a draft day trade? Will they be ready for week one? The local conversations about the team you love. All streaming free right here on the Odyssey app. A-U-D-A-C-Y. Download it today.
Download the Odyssey app and listen to The Drive with Carrington wherever you are.
Back in on The Drive on 610 Sports Radio, 610sports.com, and the Odyssey app. Happy to be joined in studio right now by our guy, Mitch Schwartz. Mitch, you were at the game on Sunday, and I think when you factor everything in, I think when you factor in the ankle, I think when you factor in Travis Kelce's injury before the game, the injuries that took place with the wide receivers over the course of the 60 minutes, I think this is the most impressive win of Patrick Mahomes' career.
I felt like I was at the game in my lazy boy at home.
I thought I saw some pictures on Instagram. I thought you were there.
I didn't post anything like I was there.
My bad. I apologize.
No, I told you I was going to be at home in my lazy boy, comfy, with a rewind button. It sounded like the game was awesome, and it seems like from people that go to a lot of games, even people that have been to, like, the Tennessee game a few years ago, like, this was the one to be there. I'm sure all the Burrowhead stuff had something to do with that and the fans being juiced for that matchup. But I also thought it was probably Pat's most impressive performance when you consider my thing is, you know, we watch him a lot and obviously I play with him and you kind of know what he normally looks like. Like you could tell he didn't look comfortable or I don't know if comfortable is the right word, but he didn't look fully healthy. He didn't look like himself. Like there was, you know, he was laboring a little bit. Obviously the few times he actually had to move laterally, kind of twist the ankle in certain directions, he had problems with it. There was a 3rd-and-1 in particular early in the game, and I'm going to shout myself out, but it was kind of in plus territory around the 15 or 20-yard line, an area that he would typically kind of put his head down and try to run for the first down. He started to break the pocket, started to run towards the line of scrimmage, felt the people on him, kind of just went up into the ball and knew that it wasn't worth risking at that point to try to fight through that early in the game. I believe that was the one we went for on 4th down and converted. But in that moment, I was like, man, I mean, we've seen every instance of how competitive he is and how much he tries to get the first down and all that. And I said, like, he doesn't look right. You know, I would imagine he's saving it. And when the game becomes more critical and he needs to make a play, he'll be willing to push the ankle. Turned out to be true. You know, final scramble of the game that ended up giving us field position. You know, he pushed through all, every bit of pain and ran almost as fast as I've ever seen him run. So, yeah, with all those things included, the weight of Burrow and Burrowhead, the weight of, you know, 3 losses in the last calendar year against them, not having all his weapons. I mean, this is probably the worst group of, you know, skill guys that he's gone out there with in one of these situations, and then 3 of them get hurt at various points throughout the game. Going up against a defense that is a pretty good defense and that has always played him well. Yeah, it's pretty incredible what he did, and it sucks that he's at the point that, like, we just gloss over how good he is and then we don't appreciate, like, how insane all the little stuff is that he does. And games like this hopefully kind of reinforce how amazing he is.
I led the show a couple of days ago with, I think Joe Burrow is fantastic. Like,
we've all sort of come to know Joe Burrow and like him more over the last 4 years since he really popped up at LSU. We got to stop comparing Patrick Mahomes to other current NFL quarterbacks and start talking about him in the pantheon of, like, he is one of the great American athletes that we've seen before. When you think about what he's accomplished in just a short period of time, 5 AFC championship games, 3 Super Bowl appearances, it could be 2 Super Bowl wins, 2 MVPs, the other ones here coming up here. Like, when you start talking about things that he's done, it's disrespectful to put Joe Burrow in the same conversation of him or Justin Herbert, and that's no shade towards what those guys are. Burrow will probably get one at some point. Josh Allen will probably get one. Herbert will probably get one at some point, but the level that he's playing at is like a Tiger Woods, Serena, Jordan level, not a Joe Burrow, Justin Herbert level.
Yeah, that's a really good point. Where I thought you were going with that is that when we talk about NFL quarterbacks, it needs to be, you know, coming into the season, it was the Mahomes Allen tier is what everyone said. You know, there were people anointing Herbert into that, which is why I was so ornery and I pushed back on that so much. I thought you were going to say, we needed to say Mahomes is in his own tier. You know, we've got Allen, Burrow. But the fact that you kind of jumped it and you just went to all sports and you started talking about, you know, Serena and Tiger and MJ, players like that, it, the first 5 years, I mean, he's absolutely in that rarefied air. He's had basically everything you could possibly want to accomplish. He's done it under varying circumstances. I mean, it's funny when you look back. I mean, I don't like playing the blame game, especially on the Dee Ford thing. Like, I hate that narrative. I get that he was offsides, but, like, that's not the reason we lose the game. You know, we scored, what, 0 points in the first half, 3 points in the first half, something like that. So that's not the reason that we lost the game. But, like, people like to say that if he's onside and Brady still throws the pick, we go to the Super Bowl. And then we do go to a Super Bowl, and we have basically 5 offensive linemen down. I'm down. Fish is down. Kelechi's down. Larry had opted out. Lucas Niang had opted out, who would have been playing by then given the other injuries. So we're down a full starting line, and he's, you know, fighting for his life there, not to steal Travis's line, but fighting for his life, obviously incredible competitor and all that. Turns out he's got, like, a torn ligament in his toe or whatever that ended up being, needed surgery after the year, and to compete the way he did with no O-line and against the defensive line of Tampa, pretty incredible. You know, last year is the outlier. The outlier is, you know, one bad half of football from the team against a really good team who goes to the Super Bowl. And now this year he's back in it. So the accolades are insane. His ability to raise his game, you know, I think I've said it a bunch, you know, comparing him to Steph Curry, I think you just brought up, like, why is Steph such a good three-point shooter? Because it, every time he jumps and shoots the ball, he makes a calculation in his body to know exactly how much he needs to put on the shot to get it in the hole. Like, that's what Pat's doing every single time he steps on the field on every single play. And his ability to raise his game and to elevate things in the right moment and to understand, again, how his ankle is going to respond, how things are going to react. I mean, we talked about this last week. It wasn't whether he was going to play or not. It wasn't really how good he was going to look running or not. It was he had to get that week of practice to know what he could do and what he couldn't and how he needed to adjust his velocity, how he needed to adjust his accuracy, because he probably wasn't going to be dealing with the same level of velocity pushing off the right foot. And he did that. And we saw incredible throws from a guy with a high ankle sprain 8 days before. And yeah, it's just crazy. I mean, obviously I'm going on a tangent here because it's fun talking about how amazing he is.
What do you think makes the Chiefs so different when it comes to next man up? Because every football team ever really highlights next man up. You know, injuries are going to happen. The next guy needs to be ready. Well, we see that happen to a lot of teams, and one or two injuries completely derail the team. We saw Mahomes leave in the first half of the Jacksonville game. Backup quarterback comes in, takes you down the field. You see 3 wide receivers get injured in this game. Marcus Kemp steps up, makes a big catch. Snead goes out, doesn't play for most of the game. A rookie steps up. What do you think makes Kansas City and the culture so differently where next man up is just not something you say, it's something that they do?
Well, one is, I mean, Veach and company put a lot of good players on the roster, so you're not, you know, putting in a guy who maybe shouldn't be out there who has to be dressed on game day. Another is just the culture of working and what the coaches do kind of day-to-day in practice coaching everybody. You know, obviously you give your starters more attention and you're coaching them, and theoretically they're the ones that are going to take the most reps. But you don't lose sight of the 7th and 8th offensive linemen, the 9th and 10th offensive linemen. You don't lose sight of the backup corners that are on scout team going up against, you know, Mecole and Juju and MVS every day. Like, those guys are getting coached while they're on scout team. It's not just go out there, run around, and make it look good. It's like, no, we want to apply our techniques. Like, this is your opportunity to go up against good players, to utilize the techniques you're learning in practice, and to improve, because you're on this team for a reason, and eventually we're going to need you in some capacity. And so the coaching you get, even if you're on scout team, is probably what allows guys to continue to grow throughout the season. And again, those guys need to be cared about and need to feel cared about, because we've all had it in life where we feel neglected and we feel like people don't have our best interests at heart, or they don't care about what we're doing. And it's very easy to shut down and to turn it off and to then begin to not care yourself. And so you are that 12th offensive lineman on the roster. You maybe just got signed 2 weeks ago, and Coach Heck is giving you the same coaching points he's given Orlando, he's given Tooney. Like, you're getting coached the same, and he's, you know, breaking down film of you on scout team going against Chris and saying, all right, you need to use this technique. You need to, and that's a great feeling to feel like, hey, you know, he does care about me. He does care that I am getting better or that I'm not. He does watch practice, and he sees the reps that I'm doing. And hopefully if I had a good day on scout team, he recognizes that, and they do. And so I think it really empowers the younger guys and the guys who aren't necessarily starting and getting all the main reps throughout practice to continue to improve and to continue to want to improve.
You've talked to me a lot about what you miss most and the camaraderie, the plane rides, and those kind of things, and it makes sense. What's it like to be in that locker room after you clinch going to the Super Bowl?
Oh, it's amazing. I've always said this, and people, you know, they believe me. It's not like they don't believe me, but the hour, maybe hour and a half after the AFC Championship game beating Tennessee was way better than the hour and a half after the Super Bowl. Because you're in Arrowhead, you have all your fans there. Obviously for us, it was the first time that we were doing it, so it was a new thing and we were really excited. You have that like trophy presentation on the field. And again, there's 70,000 fans and they're all your fans. They're screaming for you. There's media there, but there's not Super Bowl media. And so you don't feel like it's not for you. Like at the Super Bowl, you almost feel like it's for the media and you're just there, where when you get to do the championship game, you know, you feel like it's more for you. You get to go back to your own locker room and be in the locker room together, because at the Super Bowl, you get pulled in every direction again by the media. There's a media tent. There's, you know, a million people on the field who want to interview you. And so after the Super Bowl, there wasn't one moment that we were all together as a team until the plane ride home the next day. Like, we didn't get that moment in the locker room where coach could say, hey, guys, great game. Like, this is the schedule, blah, blah, blah. Because everyone's in different directions. Some people are in the media tent. Some people are showering. Some people are whatever. In a normal game, and in the AFC Championship game in particular, even though things get delayed because you're doing that trophy presentation, there's still a moment that they kind of pull guys off the field and you say, like, hey, we need to be in the locker room. And the whole team gets together and you get to celebrate together. So I always liked that championship game, you know, aftermath more than the Super Bowl. And so, yeah, those are the things that you absolutely cannot replicate post-career.
Coming up on the other side, I want to get your opinion on the back and forth between these two teams. And a lot was said after the game. I'm curious on your reaction to it. Right now, we're joined in studio by Mitchell Schwartz, getting Super Bowl stories to get you ready for next week's game against the Philadelphia Eagles. Keep it right here. It's The Drive.
The Drive with Carrington Harrison, brought to you by the DePasquale Moore Law Firm. Remember, Mike's got this on your official broadcast partner of the Chiefs and the home for Royals baseball, 610 Sports Radio.
This is former Chiefs All-Pro tackle Mitchell Schwartz, and the best Chiefs content in town is right here with Carrington Harrison on The Drive.
Right now we're joined in studio by Mitchell Schwartz. Always great to talk a little football with him. Have you heard Frank Clark after the game? Because I remember one time I played for you the Titans audio. You hadn't heard it in a while.
I believe I heard it. Was that the one where he was lighting up the cigar and there were, you know, some things said?
Yeah, let me just play it for you. Yeah. Let me just play it for you.
I don't know who the hell they think they was calling this Burrowhead. I don't know who the hell they thought they was talking about. They was going to finish us off. They going to take their bum ass back to Cincinnati. Man, they came to Chiefs Camp and got their ass thumped on. I don't know what number one did. I told him to holler at me. I don't know what the bank. I told him all holler at me. I told him last year they didn't get my best. I told him this year they barely got my best. I told him with the playoffs though, I'm the f***ing king. They gotta holler at me every f***ing game. Let's go.
That's not as good as the Titans audio, but it's still great though.
That's good, man. If you wanna, in the post-game comments, if you want to get a good one, definitely go to Frank. He'll tell you kind of what everyone's feeling, and he won't be afraid to say it. I mean, you know, most guys wouldn't say all those things. Most guys think those things, but they wouldn't say all those things. So kudos to him for doing it.
You know what? Let's just go through some of my favorite audio from after the game. Here was Chris Jones, and I think this was a tone that was set from everybody. You can't come in here and disrespect and call it Burrowhead the way that you did. Here was Chris Jones.
I'm not letting my emotions all bottle up throughout the week. There's a lot of talking going on. I'm not really much of a talker. It's a full circle, 360, man. These are moments I prepared for all offseason. I dedicated my offseason to this moment last year when I missed two sacks to end the game, and I put it up on myself. This game, we're going to end it up front. And that's what we did. We got a resilient group in our room, starting with the D-line, and these guys fought through all night, man.
The last thing you said to us when you walked off the podium here at Arrowhead was everybody enjoy Burrowhead. Did that motivate you all week?
Hey, let me tell y'all something, man. Don't ever, 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 and I'm looking at the camera when I said this, disrespect Arrowhead. I don't care how many times you done beat us. Don't ever disrespect Arrowhead Stadium. N-G-E-H-A!
I know you've talked about before that you're not a guy that gets motivated by bulletin board material, that other things motivate you, and that certainly makes sense. I think we see the Chiefs were very much motivated by bulletin board material, whether it was the mayor, whether it was the Burrowhead comments. I think the Chiefs took a lot of those things to heart, and I think, by the way, that Arrowhead, the stadium, reacted in the first 15 minutes of it, and the way the Chiefs came out there, they were certainly fueled by a lot of the things that were said over the course of the week.
Yeah, absolutely, and I didn't really understand why Cincy was going with the smack talk like that early. I mean, I know it works for some people. You know, kind of hype yourself up or you just don't care and you feel like whatever, we're going to face their best shot anyway. But I always felt like you just don't give them any added motivation to want to beat you, especially not this group. I mean, we've seen the competitor Pat is. Like, we've seen, seems like Travis, like the best thing to happen to him early in the game is to drop a pass or to fumble the ball, because then he gets really fired up and excited and, you know, he kind of plays his best games. I mean, again, Chris, like 100% as an offensive lineman, like you go into the game and you say, I am not making that guy angry at me. Like, I'm going to help him up over every pile. I'm not going to push him late. Like, that's not a guy that I'm going to make angry. So I don't think Cincy really, you know, pushed the right buttons there. And I mean, when you look back at it too, yeah, they had won three times, but they really just won once. Like, regular season matchups don't really matter. I mean, no one cares. We still had the one seed both times. They still had to come to Arrowhead both times. So it's not like, oh, they won the regular season matchup and it was this huge thing, because it didn't really lead to anything of consequence for them. So, yeah, I would imagine in the future, maybe they tamp down on that a bit, and maybe the coaching staff says, hey, guys, you know, don't spat off the week of. You know, maybe they don't have Eli Apple, so I would imagine he's not someone you're able to control in the media or what he says. And, you know, there's a chance he's not going to be there in the next season. So I would think that there's still kind of that hatred of what has built up over the last couple of years. But especially after the way this game played out, I'd imagine that going forward, there's a little bit less talk in the week preceding the game.
You mentioned Eli Apple. I don't know if you've heard this soundbite, but listen to. So MVS was interviewed after the game by Mitch Holtis. Listen to what he said about Eli Apple.
People don't realize, because it doesn't show up in the stat sheet, you get the big penalty on Eli Apple. That's the hold. That's an automatic first down. What about that play?
Yeah, you know, I was just whooping him all game, you know, and, you know, that was just another play where he couldn't cover me well enough and, you know, got the flag and we moved it up.
Does anybody in the league like Eli Apple?
No, that's been the amazing thing of the last few years. It's very clear that no one likes him, like from New Orleans and now in Cincy, like no one likes him. I don't understand why. I mean, I don't really watch those guys enough to know. Clearly he talks a lot and maybe he just irritates guys that way. And, you know, I feel like Diggs talking a little bit after the game as well. Like, receivers just feel like, oh, I just destroyed you all game. Like, yeah, maybe I didn't get the ball thrown 20 times, so I can't put up the stats on you. But I feel like they mostly walk out feeling like they did a good job against him, and he thinks that he, you know, is Darrelle Revis 2.0. So, yeah, talk about, like, the worst Q rating in the NFL. It's got to be Eli Apple. And then, of course, he's got his mom on Twitter trying to back him up, and she deletes her Twitter after the game or whatever that was. So if you're going to be talking that much, like, you just got to own it. You can't delete your Twitter after the fact.
That's what I don't like about Eli Apple is he talks a lot. Like, after they beat Buffalo, for 3 days back and forth with Stephon Diggs and Shaq Lawson and those guys, you then can't go radio silent when you lose. You got to pick which villain you want to be. At least hop on there and call all Chiefs fans broke in that situation. At least at a minimum, like, say something here. You did all that talking last week to now not tweet one single time this week. It's Wednesday. We still haven't heard from Eli Apple.
I think that's why Durant is the social media champion, because, you know, whether you like it or not, he stays on social media. You know, whatever happens, he's always going to be there. So, yeah, that's, again, one of those things where, you know, you can dish it, but you can't take it. And it really limits, you know, how much people care the next time you try to dish it.
I want to play one more cut for you. I know you've heard this at this point. Everybody has heard it, but it's still a classic.
Hey, I got some wise words for that Cincinnati mayor. Know your role and shut your mouth, you jabroni. You gotta fight for your right to party!
I would love to see a night where you and Travis Kelce go out. Just your personalities and going out. Like yesterday, I don't know if you've seen the video or not, Travis was at the KU game. You know, he stands up and he's waving everybody and all the attention is on him. He then went out to one of the Lawrence bars and is having beers and eating pizza with the students. You know, it was like a really cool thing. I just don't see you ever doing that. I would love to see a night where you and Travis Kelce just go hang out.
Yeah, I don't know what that would look like either. You know, if we went to a club, I'd just be sitting there in the corner and Trav would be doing his thing. And I just make sure that I'd almost take on the security role and just make sure everything's running well. But obviously, you could probably tell I'm a bit more mellow, and so I don't really go out or feel the need to, you know, have all those things heaped on me. It would probably be fun to see what life is like with him. You know, been out a few times, but yeah, I think two very different styles when you're going out together.
What is it like to be a part of this? And I know you're not on this team, but you're certainly a part of this run and everything that's happened. We talked about this yesterday. There are 10 teams in league history that have been to 3 Super Bowls in 4 years. The Patriots are the only team that have done it in the salary cap free agency era. You could do this in the 70s or the 80s. You could keep a collection of talent together for a long period of time. That hasn't been the case. It's a completely new offensive line, a completely new secondary. You've lost pieces. You've gained pieces. For them to go to 3 Super Bowls in 4 years and really be a second half away from going to 4 straight Super Bowls, I mean, this is one of the greatest runs we've ever seen in the history of the NFL. What's it like to be a part of it? And then see, even after you've left, you now see that they've been able to replenish it and still continue to play at the super high level.
That's pretty cool for sure to be part of it and then to look back and realize what you accomplished. The thing I guess I've come to realize the past couple years is how difficult it is. And again, you look back and, you know, I talked about the D4 thing before and how I don't blame that. But a lot of people say we were one play away, you know, 5 years ago. You know, last year was a bad half. Like, just little tiny stuff like that could be the difference. It could be much bigger stuff like the opponent you're facing or your injuries or whatever else. But winning one football game against a good team is pretty hard. And the fact that the Chiefs have been, you know, the best team over a 5-year period, won a lot of games, hosted 5 of these things, won 3 of them, you know, almost won the other 2. It's pretty spectacular and it's pretty amazing. And that was kind of the takeaway of the Patriots is, I mean, they, for 20 years, I think they went to 10 Super Bowls. Like every other year they were in a Super Bowl. And this is so far what the Chiefs have been like under Mahomes, you know, slightly ahead of schedule with 3 and 5 years. We just never really thought anything would look like that over that long of a stretch. And it's crazy that that's the way it started. And the other part of it is when you look at the New England in particular, they had maybe 4 different eras. You know, they had the first few years where they went to 3 and 4, and I think they won all 3. They had, you know, those lean years, quote unquote lean years in the middle where they didn't go to quite as many, or they lost to New York and won and they didn't win any. And then they had, you know, another 3, and then they had kind of the end of the Brady era. And so would you say that the Chiefs are maybe on the second iteration of what they look like? I mean, you could probably say the first 4 years, Tyreek, Travis, Pat is probably one run, and it ended with Cincinnati last year. And now it seems like this is kind of the beginning of the second stretch and kind of a turned over roster, especially with, you know, all the young draft picks playing.
Yeah, no, I would say that it's the second run too. I mean, you look at as you mentioned, the secondary and the young pieces that they had. I mean, this is a turned over roster here. And for them to be able to keep it together for as long as they have, and there's no reason to think the next season they're going anywhere. Again, this is one of the great runs that we've seen in the history of the league. Coming up on the other side, I want to ask you the question that everybody is asking themselves. Tom Brady retired for the second time. Is he going to stay retired? We'll get your opinion. We got Mitchell Schwartz in studio. Keep it right here. It's The Drive.
This is The Drive with Carrington Harrison, brought to you by the DePasquale Moore Law Firm. Remember, Mike's got this. If you missed any of the show, catch up on the Odyssey app or at 610sports.com. The Drive with Carrington Harrison on 610 Sports Radio and the Odyssey app.
We got Mitchell Schwartz in studio. Very happy to be talking a little bit of football with him. Coming up at the top of the hour, we'll talk about Brett Veach and his fingerprints all over this team. Mitch, it's the question everybody is asking themselves today. We saw that Tom Brady once again has retired from the league. People are skeptical. People don't believe him. I believe that Brady is retired. I don't think that Brady plays next year in the National Football League. Are you a believer? Do you think that Tom will be back, or do you think he stays retired this time?
I think he'll stay retired. I think he probably cares too much about what people think of him and how he'll be remembered. And I don't think he wants to be thought of like Rodgers right now or like Favre, where it's kind of wishy-washy and they retire and retire, all that stuff. So I would imagine he stays retired, and he unfortunately realized the toll it took to make that happen. And it kind of sucks to look now and look back on the season and think, you know, what could have been personal life, what could have been professionally if he had just, you know, stayed retired. But obviously he needed that. He needed to scratch that itch one more time.
I just, over the course of the last like 6-7 months or so, man, football just hasn't looked very fun for Tom, just like outwardly playing it. Like, you see Mahomes, and when things are going well, like, you see that excitement and the way that other people feed off of it. Tom just this year just looked miserable the whole time. And I also don't think Tom was like fully invested in the season, whether it was mentally, physically. I know he had all this stuff going on, but he wasn't practicing on Wednesdays. He then left on a Friday night to go to Robert Kraft's wedding. He would have never had done that before. It just didn't seem like he was 100% in. Maybe he's 90% in, but I don't think football's a game that you can be somewhat in and somewhat out. You got to be fully in and committed physically and mentally to it, or it's just time for you to step aside.
Well, I would say he obviously had a very tough kind of personal life this year and going through a divorce and kind of the family getting uprooted. So that's a major part of it. I almost think of it more in the sense of like a LeBron season, where LeBron sees the writing on the wall. He knows his team's not very good. You know, that groin injury all of a sudden becomes a 3-month injury, and you realize, like, you know, we're probably not going to be good. We're probably not going to make the playoffs. If we do, he's smart enough to know that as a 7 or 8 seed, you know, you're going to get bounced. And you just kind of, it's easier to check out a little more. It's easier to not do all the little things that I'm sure a guy like Brady was so maniacal about and that we've heard stories of now in year 23 or whatever. And you can kind of tell that the coaching's not very good. The offense isn't very good. Things are just weird. Your personal life's falling apart. Like, yeah, it is easier to do the other stuff. And plenty of people survive doing other stuff. Like, it's not like, I would imagine him, given 90% of what he's used to, is still probably more than 98% of the people in the NFL. But if you're used to doing, you know, X and X made you successful, and now you do X minus 10%, you know, maybe there's a chance that that bleeds over into your quality of play or the other things. But I think it's more of, he came back, he was as committed as he thought he could be and would be, but the team wasn't very good at the beginning of the year. He kind of understood that they weren't going to be good for the remainder of the year, and that, you know, there wasn't necessarily a chance to turn it around. And at that point, it's easy to, you know, kind of let things slide just a little bit.
So we talked about this right before you got here, and I think Brady's going to be a big, you just had to have been there kind of person. Like, you don't have to watch football in the 90s to see how good Barry Sanders was, for example. Like, 10 years from now, if you just watch Steph Curry shoot, you're going to, hey, that guy's the best shooter I've ever seen before. Magic Johnson. You didn't have to see him play to understand the impact that he had on the game. I don't know if you're going to be able to turn on YouTube and understand why Tom Brady was so good. I think you're going to have watched him play when we played. And I think quarterback is largely defined by your, what's your confidence level in your quarterback in a high pressure situation to take your team down the field. And I still think Brady's the number one overall pick in that. If you need a touchdown and one quarterback to take you down the field, I think you would pick Tom Brady, that even though he doesn't have some of the wild plays that Mahomes has or Favre or some of the great quarterbacks, not even Peyton Manning, I think he was going to be the – you had to have been alive during this time to really understand how dominant of a player Tom Brady was.
See, that I disagree with, because I feel like he's so similar to Montana that, you know, I didn't grow up watching Montana, but I knew, oh, man, that dude had four rings, and that everyone said he was the best quarterback. And so I think coming out of this era, Brady's got seven rings, and he has the legacy that he has, went to 10 Super Bowls, you know, got the seven rings. He had the 28-3 comeback. You know, everyone talks about him like, oh, Brady just needs to get the ball at the end of the game and he'll go win. So I think he's got all those things that, you know, make someone revered past their prime, and he doesn't have to have, you know, the splash plays or the wow plays, because he's got the greatest resume and, you know, definitely NFL history, if not, you know, kind of all team sports history for what, I mean, not team sports history. You talk about Russell or one of those guys, but I think his resume stacks up favorably enough, and he did enough kind of late game heroics that he will be remembered as kind of the unquestioned greatest ever because of everything he was able to accomplish. That's the thing with Pat, is Pat's obviously more skilled, more, you know, physically talented, able to do things that Tom could never dream of. But if Pat wins four or five, is he going to be seen, you know, more favorably than Tom down the road? I mean, obviously there's 15 years for his career to unfold. So I just think people are going to see Brady as kind of the unquestioned best because he was able to match performance. He had all the stats you could want. He had all the success you could want. He did it on two different teams. So it's not just a Belichick thing. I just don't think there's a way to poke holes in that resume. And I don't think, but the highlights don't look magical. I don't think that's something that is going to matter too much in 10 years.
Two things I want to ask you about before we get you out of here. Did you ever play a game against your brother in the NFL?
I did. In 2013, when I was with Cleveland, we came here and played Kansas City.
How was that?
It was cool. You know, the nice thing is we both play offense, and I think he wasn't starting at the time. I think John Asamoah was. That was right before John got hurt. My brother started playing more. But it was cool. We went and ate some barbecue on Saturday before, you know, meetings. And my parents, my mom made those split shirts. So she had a half Cleveland, half Kansas City. I think it was a game that we lost, I'm sure. We actually might have won that one. But I think it was a decent game. No, I think we lost that one. We ran a flea flicker. Jason Campbell was our quarterback.
Oh, wow.
We ran a play that was like a run play killed with the flea flicker. And I think he was... maybe it was a flea flicker kill run, and he was supposed to kill it based on the look, but he didn't kill it. But half the O-line, like, we knew what he was supposed to do, so we ran what he was supposed to do, and we ran the flea flicker. We actually scored the touchdown. I think it was a deep bomb to Josh Gordon, but we ended up losing that game. But that flea flicker story is pretty funny because if you watch the highlight of that one, like, half the O-line is just blocking for a run play, so we kind of let our guys go, and it almost gets destroyed, but we actually score.
Because I'm just thinking about Jason and Travis in this, and I understand that, you know, one plays on offense, the other one plays on offense. They're not going directly up against each other, but there has to be that moment on the field of, man, we did it. You know, both of us have this dream when we were growing up. We both accomplished it, and now, you know, our parents are watching us play at the absolute biggest stage, and one of us is going to end this game being a Super Bowl champion. A little bit different because both of them have won a ring before, but just a really, really cool storyline to this game.
Yeah, it's more cool after the game. It won't be for these guys because one wins the Super Bowl, but for my brother and I, like, after the game, you're in your full pads, you just played some football, and you're kind of able to see each other. I mean, pregame feels more normal because you're just kind of in whatever you wear out there for pregame. Like, once you're actually in your full pads, you don't really see each other before the game. You know, you do your warm-up, you go back in the locker room with your team. But in terms of the brother matchup, I mean, this is me speaking just completely on my own. I have no idea. But, like, I feel like Travis would probably be rooting more for Jason than Jason's rooting for Travis, because I feel like Jason is – there's been retirement talk the last few years, so this very well could be his last game. It would be his second Super Bowl and would kind of solidify, like, him as a Hall of Famer, I feel like, where, you know, Jason probably sees Travis and thinks, he's got Pat. He's, you know, could win a few more. So I'd imagine, and Travis is going to be a sure first bout Hall of Famer anyway. So I feel like in terms of their legacies and kind of what that looks like for Hall of Fame and post-career stuff, like, Jason getting the ring is a little more important. And so, you know, they both, like, want it for each other. They both want it for themselves as well. But I could just see, like, them realizing, like, yeah, it probably does mean more for Jason. Obviously, that doesn't mean Travis plays any less hard or whatever. But it would be pretty cool for him to be able to, like, get the second ring, retire, like, be a Hall of Famer in 5 years. Like, that's a pretty cool story for that family.
I'll be really curious to see from a media perspective, like, what that means from him. I mean, the podcast is going super successful. I mean, I think he could have, like, a Pat McAfee-type effect. Like, I think Jason's incredible at this. I think he can do anything he wants to do from a media landscape when this is over. And we'll be curious to see, especially if he gets that other ring, he retires, what it looks like for Jason Kelce for the next, you know, 6 months or so, because the possibilities are endless for him.
Yeah, and that's kind of the cool thing is if you can carve out that role. I mean, McAfee is crazy successful. He's also crazy busy. I mean, he's got his show that he does every day. He's doing College Game Day. He's doing other stuff. Like, not everyone wants to be that busy, especially, you know, I know Jason's got a family and all the other stuff, and you've been busy in the NFL grind for so long. Like, it's a little different as a punter, let's be real. And so, you know, for a guy who's been the center for 12 years or whatever it is and probably wants to, you know, have a podcast a couple times a week and doesn't necessarily want to do 4 hours of radio a day. Like you said, he's carved out that podcast. They're obviously both going to be relevant for the rest of their lives. So he can probably pick and choose whatever he wants to do. I don't necessarily see him as a guy who leans into like traditional media. I think he kind of does the fun stuff with Travis.
That is our guy, Mitchell Schwartz, joining us in studio, getting you ready for the Super Bowl next week against the Philadelphia Eagles. Mitch, man, always good talking football with you, my man.
Same. Good to be here.
Coming up on the other side, we'll talk about Brett Veach and how one of his biggest gambles paid off and is a major reason why the Chiefs find themselves in the Super Bowl. That's coming up. Keep it right here. It's The Drive.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
All right, football fans, the NFL Draft is almost here, and the free Odyssey app brings you the latest coverage from the biggest sports radio stations across the country. Which players will help your team the most? Who will make a draft day trade? Will they be ready for week one? The local conversations about the team you love. All streaming free right here on the Odyssey app. AUDACY. Download it today.